I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to In The Pocket. My name's Johnny.
And my name's Chris.
Two totally average bass players, and we're here to talk all about that bass. As well as answering your questions at home, each week we take a look at the latest news, break down some tones, all to give you the lowdown on the low end. Chris, how are you, my friend?
I am absolutely bloody wonderful. How are you on this lovely Wednesday night, I'm going to say?
Yes, I think.
There we go.
Yes, it is Wednesday. I listened outside, the birds were saying, yes, it's Wednesday.
Coming to you live. This just in, it is Wednesday.
It's Wednesday, my dudes. I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Had a big delivery yesterday of lots of bases, which were all on my wall now, which you can kind of see.
You did have, you had a very impressive package come through your front door. Very nice indeed.
My goodness. And now it's all mine to gobble up home by myself.
I have a package literally next to me, and I could open it on the podcast right now if you wanted me to.
Oh my goodness. Well, start doing it now.
Okay.
Start doing now. I'm intrigued to know what it is.
It takes literally 2 seconds.
Go on then.
Listeners of the podcast will not be happy.
Just a load of rustling and excited boys. I was going to say my two favourite things, but I think I'll redact that. Nice.
Bentley. Mercedes.
We've turned into some kind of advert.
I'm obsessed with that TikTok, by the way. I'm
fragrance now.
Right, all right. I've got them. Are you ready, Johnny?
Yep.
I'll take that as a yes because you're frozen.
I said yes, then you froze. So.
Oh, no. Are you back?
I'm back, baby. Let's show me what you got. Wow. Thanks for that. Thank you so much for that. You really
ruined your day.
Upside down. I think you enlightened us all into who you truly are.
Yeah.
Not big into that.
No.
There was guitar strings for you, all you people at home. Not bass strings. No. There were 6 of them in that little cheap, inexpensive packet.
I got to be honest with you. These are the Spenny strings. Like, these are Diodario MYXL guitar strings, 10 to 52. These are definitely on the Spenny side of bass strings, but sorry, of strings in general. These were like 11 quid. I was over the bloody moon that expensive guitar strings are this cheap.
They're like half the price of normal bass strings.
I know. I was over the moon. But no, I am broadening my horizons a little bit as the working musician.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
You've given up.
You've given up. No. I was just thinking the other day. I've got like, I have 11 electric guitars upstairs, and I see loads of posts online being like, "We need a depth guitarist. We need a depth guitarist. We need a depth guitarist." And I'm like,
because they're unreliable.
You're telling me. All the reliable ones are now bass players. Hello. But I thought if I can double the pool of paid work, I'm going to do it.
Say pool again.
Pool.
I've just done a poo in the pool.
I've just done a poo in pool. Thank you.
Yeah, but, that makes a lot of sense, you know.
I'm just doing a bit of experimentation. Like, I have picked up a guitar in recent memory. But I can't, it must be like for 10 seconds at a time. I played one chord on the Darla, on an upcoming Darla single.
And is it the best chord?
No, it's just like an atmospheric part that was on the demo, but I came up with the guitar part. Excuse me. Fantastic. I came up with a guitar part on the demo, and then when we got to the actual recording, Jay, the guitarist, was like, what's that bit? Because I didn't do it on the demo, so I went, oh, it's this.
So I'm give it air.
I'm on it as a session guitarist.
And then Jay recorded all the bass, I'm assuming.
Perfect. Yeah. No, that was a computer. That was MIDI. Nice. It nearly was, actually. It actually nearly was.
What?
I was really ill.
Leading up to, you told me this before.
Yeah, I had a murder cold the like 3 weeks, nearly all of December. I had a murder cold, and then we recorded in the first week of January. I think we went down on New Year's Day or the day after to record.
It's my favorite day to go down.
Hell yeah, ka-chow. And I was absolutely sick as a parrot. Like, I only got like back to like
that is not a phrase.
Sick as a parrot. Yeah, it's a phrase.
That must be another northern thing.
Sick as a parrot.
Sick as a dog. Parrot? I've heard.
No, I'm pretty sure sick as a parrot. Sick as a parrot. I swear that's a phrase.
Or he be sick as a parrot.
But yes, I was really, really ill. And like, I almost couldn't play the parts on the EP because I had such a bad cold. But luckily, we had a really good producer, and look, I got through it. Is the important part of the story? But for a bit, I was like, guys, if I can't play this, it's gonna have to be the MIDI we used for the demos.
Oh no!
Which would have been heartbreaking. Yeah. But yeah, luckily we got through it in the end. But I have been in bands where I've been the bass player, and I have not played on any of the material, any of it. Someone else has played.
Shame.
Yeah, someone else has played bass on it, and I've been told to just say I played bass on it. Fun, isn't it? Don't be in a
really
band.
Good stuff. Really good.
Anyway,
stuff.
Yes, guitar
shall
strings.
We,
yes,
shall we let's move away from guitar strings?
Yes,
and talk about some lovely questions that we've.
God, please, yes, end my suffering.
Yes. If you at home want to get involved with this very podcast and ask us some questions, please, please, please go and follow us on Instagram at In The Pocket Pod. Go and do that. And your life will be so much better because you can ask questions for this podcast, just like this next person. That's where you ask the question.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it? Oh, dear. My phone that I have the questions isn't next to my laptop. But I remember the question. I believe this week's question, Johnny, was pretty simple. It was our thoughts on block inlays on bass.
Ooh. So I actually go in and, like, on and off with block inlays quite a lot. I think on some basses, looks so good.
Okay.
Love it. On some basses, I'm like, it's got to really suit the bass, I think. Overall, okay. I'm in team block. I'm in team block inlay. I'm a fan. My favorite kind of block inlay is on a rosewood fretboard and with like a perloid block inlay, like a 70s jazz, like with a rosewood board, like that kind of thing with a white binding on the fretboard. Oh! That is my favorite. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you 100%. I lean towards team block over team not block. But it does depend on the bass as well. Like, for example, I don't think I'd like blocks on my Stingray or no. I would like blocks on my Godan, which is a rosewood neck. Well, no, because I'm about to contradict myself. I would absolutely love block inlays on my jazz bass, though.
That's block the thing. Inlays. I think it's got to be a jazz.
Yeah,
right?
However, I would also kind of really like black P bass, maple neck, blocks on the fretboard.
Yes, that's cool. I think on a P bass it looks a bit funny. The 70s Squire P bass has got that, the classic vibe. And yeah, like it's a vibe as it's...
it's a classic vibe, suggests. If you will.
Yes, absolute classic vibe. But yeah, it's not. I don't know. It's a jazz bass thing for me personally. That's where my
100% jazz bass lies. Maple neck. I'm gonna say a bass I would really like to own is a white jazz bass with a light purloined pit guard, or like the TV, that mint green or TV yellow pit guard, black pickups, rusted maple neck and headstock that's the same material as the neck. I don't want it to be matching the body. And then it's a, like I said, it's a maple neck with block inlays. Mm.
I think you can make that happen one day.
I think we could make that happen. I think that's a very, very, very low expectation for a dream bass.
White. More white.
White bass, please.
Fantastic. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up our thoughts on block inlays. Overall, we're team block.
Absolutely. Not cock
block. Team block.
Hell to the air.
Fantastic. Let us move on to our next segment. That is the news.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while, hasn't it? It's been giving us some time for some news to start rolling in, baby. And rolling it has. The first news bit I want to talk about is kind of one we've spoken about a little bit before. If you're listening to the podcast, you would have heard us talk about the leak around the Fender Vintera 2, the sequel to the Vintera series. So they're kind of vintage-inspired guitars and basses. And we've got some really nice additions and fresh looks. You think, like, how can they freshen up a vintage reissue thing again? You know, like, they've already done it. What else can you do? But I really like what they've done here, and we'll talk about it now. I do have Fender's website up. I'm going to try and share my screen, and so
okay.
For the visual side of this, we can have a look at what that looks like.
We're in uncharted podcast territory here.
Here we go. Whoa!
Oh, my God!
Wowee. Well, here we go.
No, I actually can't see it, but I hope you can.
Oh, okay. Well, it's saying sharing, so...
I've got it. Oh, professional broadcasters here.
Nice. So I'm on Fender's website now.
Inject that jazz bass into my veins.
Right, that is so nice. Let's take a look at that jazz first. This is the 60s jazz bass. We've got it in Lake Placid Blue with a lovely torque pickguard on that. No, I don't want 5% off Fender. Thank you very much. Gosh. It comes in black, which is, classic 60s look. And a Fiesta Red, of course. But, I wish that was a torque pickguard so bad. I've been gassing for a Fiesta Red jazz bass at the minute. I'm tempted to refinish my Glary in Fiesta Red to mod it, because I like everything
about I'd like a Fiesta Red P bass with like a torque pickguard, because that's like the Pino Palladino
100%, like look.
Ooh, those block inlays on that, what was that? Was that a Jag?
That was a Jag.
I know it was a guitar,
yes.
But that was a good example of block inlays in my opinion.
70s Jag. We've got the Bass 6, cool. your favourite bass.
Oh, yes, my favourite. Yep. Yeah, love that.
Our friend Matt Parker will be getting one of those. Comes in.
Yeah, move
lovely
on.
Blue.
Moving on. Moving on.
The Mustang as well. You can see the prices all down here. They're all kind of as to be expected. We've got an orange one, the competition stripe, and the blue. But look, I didn't know this about it. I saw someone playing it today. It's got it's a burst.
What?
Look. It's got a slight burst to it.
My goodness.
So that's Johnny, something a little bit fresh.
Listeners of the podcast, it is my birthday next week.
I thought you can say, I'm fully erect.
Your words, not mine.
It is your birthday this week. Next week.
It is.
This weekend. Birthday boy coming up. So is that the one?
Actually, I've just come up with a really good excuse. We were discussing a thing that we will not mention to the viewers about, where we needed to go somewhere, but we needed a reason to go.
Yes.
What if said reason is Chris would like to try some short scale basses?
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes.
We and back to the subject, the star of the show, by a long way, in my opinion, is that 50s precision bass.
Oh, it's my favorite. That's the Squire. You know, like that's what it's modeled on, and that is my dream bass. I love it. The blonde, gold, and maple—that is a killer combo. These are going to have Chunky Boy necks, of course, but it's just so good looking. I love it. Then we've got the '60s bass as well, which is classic.
Which looks great. Great too. I would like to add. However, you prefer that 50s position? Oh, and the Telecaster bass is super cool as well. But
yeah, we'll get onto that in a minute.
Yes, just quickly, that 50s precision bass, do you prefer the gold, I assume?
Yes, I prefer the desert sand to the black, yes.
Oh, nice. I prefer the black.
Oof. The black is still killer.
Only by a little bit. And for me, it'd be important to see that pit guard. The hue of that will really determine it, because there are some bases that do this effect where it looks terrible. But this one 100%. Looks like it doesn't.
Totally. Like that Schecter. The one that
the one
we spoke about, and like the hue just wasn't right. And look at the hue on even on these pictures here. It looks darker there. Oh, it looks different in those two pictures, even though it will be the same pit guard.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like the lighting is slight, but yet the color of the neck is exactly the same. So it's definitely a different color.
That'll be the thing with, like, that's a problem with gold pit guards, is that they're lush if you get them from the right angle, but from another angle it looks disgusting. Like,
you know,
it's like, wow.
You know what's a really good pit guard?
What's that?
Oh, I just realised I can't say it. This will be the third time I've mentioned a guitar on this podcast.
Oh, come on, three strikes and you're out.
I know. Right, new podcast host from next week. I've got a Fender Strat upstairs. It's called the Rustic Ash Fender Strat. Google it. It's like an exposed wood grain body with this like untreated copper pit guard. And depending on the light, it's like a really dark copper, like really dark, or a super bright purpley red.
Oh, that's...
I'll show you. It's cool. I recommend Googling it. I would love them to make a bass with that exact aesthetic, because it's a cool...
I feel like
guitar.
There's so much more they can do with aesthetics, you know, even just color combos. Like, let's see some more. Finishing up the Vintera range. We've also got this Telecaster bass as well, which is new, in a vintage white and a surf green. I think loads of people will absolutely love this. I don't love mudbuckers in that position, but that's going to be very specific.
Never tried one.
Kind of sound that you're going to go for. I found that I really like that style of humbucker in the bridge, like the Squire Rascal. But yeah, the neck, not so much. If you're into that sound,
all right. Good for you. Never try one, but that would be really cool. With a like a single rail pickup or a P bass pickup in a Telecaster body,
yeah,
that looks really cool in my opinion. Big win in my opinion, and I am usually very skeptical of anything Fender bring out ever.
Yeah, well, I think they've done the right thing. It's the vintage stuff, but given us what we didn't have last time and some little curveballs in there as well. Yeah. So very, very 100%. Nice indeed. Let's move on to the next bit of news, and it is on the other side of the household name, should we say. Well, no, but it's Gibson. Gibson.
Oh, we're doing that one first, okay.
Yes, sorry. that seemed like a smoother segue. We have got a new bass from Gene Simmons out of the blue. He's had a couple of signature Gibsons. Over the years, he had one. I feel like last year he had a new one. He had the new Thunderbird, and now he's just got another one.
No, was that not Rex Brown?
Had one as well. Yeah.
He's like the ultimate cash grabber. Like Kiss are like the worst band for this. The worst than Motley Crue for this.
Well, it's going to get worse for that, and when you see the price.
I've seen the price. I was absolutely mortified. But anyway, please go on.
I think that this is like kind of cool because it's a little bit different. It's not just like, oh, here's my black version of this guitar, whatever. It's a bit different. It is an EB0 bass, but it looks a lot better than like your standard SG type bass or one that you've had before in that kind of configuration. It's got that mud buckery type thing near the bridge, like I just said. I quite like that. I think that's pretty good. I don't think this will be that good, just because classic Gibson, I don't know. But look at that price, £7,200. Who in their right mind, unless you're a massive Kiss fan, is going to buy that? Like,
I'm a really big Kiss fan, and I know. I have I have three big problems with this bass. First one, the price is a joke. That is absolutely horrendous. To pay that much money for a guitar and or bass is ridiculous to begin with, but for something that is like a production model kind of just air.
Yeah.
Not keen. Number two, scale length, no. I would rather... I don't even think Gene Simmons plays like a medium or short scale bass.
Well, apparently it's a callback to some live TV stuff that they
yeah, I've seen that. Yeah,
they had before. It's a I can see here it's a 30.5, so it's not a short scale because the short scale's a 30-inch, Chris. No, it is a short scale.
You just fully sniffed your own fart there.
Yeah, and it smelled good.
You did the Jeremy Clarkson like, oh, it's actually a 32 because. And please continue.
Yes, and it's I think it's like oh, that's cool. If I'd be interested in this if it was like £350, you know, like. But sadly, it is far from that. So it's a no for me.
It's a big no from me, and I have one final reason why I'm very anti this bass, and it's also why I'm quite not on Team Kiss ever again now. So.
He's on Team Snog.
Hell yeah. Kiss were the second ever band I saw live. Ever. First one was Metallica. Second one was Kiss. Third one was Feeder. And they were really good. But anyway, Kiss, second ever band I saw live. Amazing. Big, key moment for me of, like, kind of, I want to play music as my thing now. That's, yeah. Like, you know, like, oh my God. That kind of thing. I went with my uncle, long story short. Uncle, he's not here anymore. We'll put it in that term. So, when I saw Kiss at Download, 2 years ago now? Yeah, 2 years ago when they headlined. That was meant to be the last ever UK show. It was like on the Farewell Tour. I think you know where this is going.
Yeah.
And that was a nice little moment because I went with my mum, and it's my mum's brother who'd passed away. And it was like a nice little... It was almost like a full circle. It was like I saw Kiss when I was 12/13. It was something that inspired me to want to be a musician. I'm now seeing them again at the age of, would I have been 27? Yeah, 27 at the time. And, oh, look, I'm a musician for a living. That's my job. I'd just literally pulled the plug on my day job and decided to go full-time as a musician 3 weeks before Download. So I just started. I was like, I've done it. And it was nice, a little nice full circle moment for that. Me personally, my career, bit of a grief thing and like a family thing. Thought, cool. And then they announced more dates. And now, every time I listen to Kiss, and especially when I see, I'm going to say it, when I see crap like this on the Gibson website, it just makes me go, ah! And it doesn't... that's why when I saw this first, I was like, this can get in the bin. I'm not keen. For a band that aren't supposed to exist anymore, that are now touring still.
But look.
And then bring this out, which is not a £7,000 bass. I mean, that case is really nice. No. But still.
It's a wild price, let's be honest. It's crazy.
It's a no from me.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping the next one will not be a no from you.
Good segue. Across the pond...
Well, let's bring both the segues in, you know?
Yes, perfect, good work. Though.
Yeah. The next one I want to talk about is Ashdown Engineering. Hey, Chris, Ashdown, they make amps, right? Did you know they also make basses? Seems like
yes,
not many
but,
people...
Do. Yes, but for the sake of this, I will go, no, I, did,
oh,
I
what?
Didn't know they made...
Well, it seems like not many people do, because I posted about these today, and some people are like, what? Today I learned this. Yeah, they make basses, and now they are stepping into the affordable market. They had done a couple of their own basses before that were upwards of £1,000, you know, more. They were just starting out, so they can't really go full mass production straight away. Now they've got the experience under their belt. We've got some new basses from Ashdown, the Roasted series. So gives it away. It's all with roasted maple. Roasted maple must be going cheap. Or something like
yeah,
now,
it really. There must be
so many.
Maybe Wilco's were like the main supplier of roasted maple to the world, and they've gone bust. But yeah, like, do you remember? Rosewood became didn't Rosewood become like an endangered wood.
Yes, yes.
But now it's fine again?
It's becoming fine again because they've planted more trees, I guess. And that's why we saw a change to like laurel, Indian laurel.
Yeah, and like Wenge went everywhere. And my personal favourite exotic wood, because it's the best name ever, Panga Panga.
Panga Panga. Oh, my Panga Panga's gone everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, God. Darling, I've burnt the Panga Panga.
It's all over the Panga Panga. It's going to taste horrible.
It's a bit Panga Panga-y, this. Anyway, Ashdown, yes.
We have got four models here. You can see on my screen. We've got the Roasted Lowrider. This is their Thunderbird type base. This is the one I was most excited about when I saw it at NAMM back along. Passive base, just two humbuckers in there in a neck and bridge position, brass saddles. It's awesome. Yeah, really cool, affordable version of a Thunderbird, because, you know, otherwise you're looking at Harley Benton and, spoiler alert, I think that base is a bit crap. And then the Epiphone one is fine. So yeah, a nice new competitor for that one. We've got the Roasted Saint, which is like their bread and butter, like PJ base, in this really cool, the Saint body shape that they've got. No active electronics on any of these. And it comes in these incredible colours, this ice blue, an onyx green, and a shell pink, all for £329.
It's a cool green.
So really cool green. We've got the Roasted Saint Soap and a short scale version of this one as well, both for £300. I'll just click on this one for the sake of it. This is my personal favourite now, in this green. Whoa, so good. So good. The single... there's just the single pickup in there. It suits the short scale thing as well, because they do it in long scale and short scale, both for the same price.
That's good to like, see.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really cool.
Although it's less wood, so you would think they'd charge more for the long scale.
I always charge more for less wood. So that's all fine by me.
These are
available
within.
For pre-order now. Available for pre-order, like I said, in the green, the blue, and the pink. Great finishes, great specs, and a great price. So yeah, I have got them on my wall behind me here as I unbox them today. And yeah, spoiler alert, I'll just say that they're very, very good. So I'm excited to dive into these a bit more and showcase the tones that they've got under the hood, because from the outside they look amazing, and for a great price. So looking forward to hearing everybody's thoughts on these. I've just spoken for a lot then. What do you think about these?
I think they're on to a winner. Obviously they've got to be good, but you've played them and you say they are good. Yes, question mark.
Yes.
So correct. I think if they're good bases at that kind of like £300 to £400 mark, that's really great for like kind of a, I would call it like your first proper base in Ur Quartz. Mm-hmm. Like you might just be starting out, let's pretend you're a teenager. You've got a base for like Christmas or whatever is like your first thing. Your parents might not want to invest like £300 to £400. Maybe they do, which is obviously great, but mine didn't. So your like first instrument of that style might be like kind of like the £100 to £200, you know, might be something that you just kind of get used to for your first like 6 months. And then you go, okay, I actually want to learn, or I'd like to own something that's a little bit more resilient in the gigging department. Something that's going to sound a bit better. It's a better investment in terms of quality and it will last a long time. It sounds like this is going to perfectly sit in that market. And also you are buying from a very small independent company as opposed to going to... That's another great point, actually. It's really great to see a small independent company be able to be this competitive with cost. Because if you compare them to someone like Squire, Harley Benton, even Sire to an extent, you know, they don't have
they're
that
just not
huge
comparable in terms of size.
Of size, you know, no, isn't Ashdown? Totally isn't Ashdown like two guys or three guys?
Ashdown, I think in total the entire
five guys
is like eight employees. Apparently.
I was hoping it'd be five then, so I could make a joke about the burger chain. But yeah, but look, like five less than 10 employees compared
it's like
to
five guys going up against McDonald's, you know.
Absolutely. And I'm not a man of economics or staffing or HR, but I'd like to think there's a few more than 8 to 10 people working for, say, Harley Benton. Although it would be funny if Squire was like eight geezers and that's it.
They're like, can't believe we're getting away with this.
Well, I can't believe it. No one knows. There's only one guy at Fender.
But yes, Defender.
Defender. Defender, Defender. But anyway, I think this is good. I think this is good. I think this is a good win. They all look good. They're unique enough to sort of stand out in terms of the design, but at the same time, you can see they kind of fall. They're safe options in terms of the design, but they're just interesting enough to kind of like separate themselves from like a J bass, a P bass, and one that looks a bit like an SG, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and at this price range, like, it's sensible to keep them spec fairly simple, because then you concentrate the quality in the fundamentals of the bass.
The stuff that matters, yes. If it's, you know, I'll call it bog standard, but I mean it in a good way. If it's like bog standard PJ passive electronics, it means more money has gone into a decent bridge, a good neck, good electronics, as opposed to if these were active, it would be like, where have you cut the corner here to make it active for this price?
Exactly. Well, that's all the news that we had for this week. And let's move on to our second question.
It's time for question number two.
My favourite number.
Hell yeah. Who are your most inspirational non-bassist musicians?
Mm.
Jonathan Dibble to serve.
So when I read this question, I've kind of thought about it from like... Well, there's a couple, really. I mean, think about it from a playing point of view. Like, there's loads of players that I really like that aren't bass players, of course. Like, there's drummers that I really like. There's singers that I really like. I'm going to say this one because I've never heard somebody talk about music the way that this person does. And that is Yvette Young. She's a guitarist from America in the band Covert. And she just, the way she talks about sounds and colors and how, you know, it's formed and how she puts it together and the textures that she uses is so interesting. There's a really good interview with her. I think it's on Anderton's, actually. I was just like in awe of her passion and like what she brought to it. She's obviously a very skillful player and amazing at what she does, but like the way that she said about how she brings the tones together and the way that she kind of sees, almost seeing textures like colours and how they mix together. I just thought that was amazing. She's really eloquent with talking about that kind of thing. And I got her energy through the screen, you know. I was like, oh yeah, I felt really pumped after it. So that was the first one that came to my mind. A couple of honourable mentions, you know, like Hayley Williams, like incredible person and vocalist. Like Zach Farrow, I think, is an amazing drummer. Eddie Throw is an amazing drummer. Like, there's so many out there that I could mention on a playing point of view. But yeah, I kind of went on a bit of a left field one a little bit, just based on someone that first came to mind, someone that has inspired me in a moment, that in a way that no one else has.
Very nice. Curious, how do you apply that sort of wisdom you get from Yvette Young, like that vibe she gives off? How do you take that knowledge and apply it to you as a bass player? So you saw that and you thought it was really interesting and you gain inspiration from it, but then how does that filter down into you? What do you take from it?
I think it helped me visualize effects a little bit more, like understanding what this tone needs or like what this mix needs. And I can kind of, I looked at it from a different way, not just use my ears, but almost like using my eyes at the same time and thinking like, well, this is what it kind of looks like. And if it needs like this fuzzy low mid type thing, I feel like it helped me just reimagine how something looks, and always seeing it as like a sound wave type thing and thinking about how this texture will fit in here. It's a completely bonkers thing to explain to someone that isn't a musician. A really tough thing to explain even now. But yeah, it just kind of made me reevaluate how I look at sounds a little bit.
Interesting. Food for thought, indeed. Yes, I've worked a gig that Yvette Young has played I did not play with Yvette Young. I'm going to clarify that. I was doing a job at a venue that she was playing at, and I met her. She's very nice. There you go.
You were cleaning the bogs. Like, oh, hello.
Yeah, all right, love. You're eight. who would I pick? I'll do two quick honourable mentions, and then I'll do the main one. So I'd say, if I had to do two honourable mentions, I'd say as a non-bass playing musician.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Musician, I'm sure he does play bass, but I'd say I really like Rick Beato, the YouTuber. I know he's not just a YouTuber, he's a producer and a songwriter and all the, an educator. I really, really like the way he processes information and trickles it down to the user. Like, he's so good. He has a series, I'm sure you've seen it, but to anyone who hasn't, it's called What Makes This Song Great. And what he does is he takes like a really undeniably good song like Kiss From A Rose by Seal or Mr. Brightside. And Mr. Brightside is a good song, okay? All right.
I mean, that is just a fact. Yes, people, you hear it every single wedding and like...
And there's a reason for that. And anyone, and I'll say this right now, as a man who plays a lot of weddings, anyone who says, I don't like Mr. Brightside, it's really boring, play it at a wedding and watch what happens. Everyone goes absolutely mental. That, Sex on Fire, Dakota, everyone, Take Me Out by Franz Ferdinand, everyone goes, Chelsea Dagger, I'll keep going.
That's the next one.
Everyone goes absolutely mental. I know you can sit at home and listen to them and go, oh, I don't like it, but it was almost as if it wasn't written for that moment. It was written for the live arena in mind. But anyway, Rick Beato is really good at taking what many would at face value perceive to be complicated music theory. Like, you know, like, oh, the singer is hitting the sixth against this chord and he's dropping down to the third and the reason for this. And you know, all the layers of music, he gives you the actual theory as in what's going on, but then he translates it into they're doing this and this is why it's to give this effect. This is why it's a good idea. And it's very top-down, breaking everything down. Love that. Big fan.
Yeah.
Second honourable mention as a non-bass playing inspiration, and I'm sure he plays bass as well, big John Mayer fan. Very big John Mayer fan. I think John Mayer is a great songwriter. He's a great guitarist and great musician. And again, I just like his attitude around music. It feels very non-gatekeepy. Like, last night I watched a 20-minute video of him explaining how you can play major pentatonic and minor pentatonic at the same time. And it was not something I would expect, like, a musician of his level of fame. And it was on an Instagram Live. It was a screen recording of an Instagram Live put on YouTube. And it's just him sat in his living room, iPhone, front camera, gets Instagram Live. There's no fancy tech setup. It's just the guitar's on the floor. The guitar amp's on the floor next to him. And he's just talking to the camera. It's not really scripted. It's a bit of a mess. You know, like that kind of thing. And I just like how there's almost like a barrier that you would sometimes see from like a normal person to like a superstar pop star kind of thing. And I think John Mayer's very good at smashing that boundary down as much as he possibly can. To almost be like, he's just a guy who plays guitar. And I really like that. I hope if I ever get to those lofty expectations or achievements of a career, I can be like that. That would be great for me. Final one, because I've spoken for a lot now. Big non-bass playing musical inspiration by far. It's James Hetfield from Metallica. All day, every day.
That's the one.
James Hetfield is my top tier main musical inspiration, primarily from like an energy perspective. And I'm not trying to get too philosophical here, but whenever I'm playing on stage, if it's a gig where I'm like performing, obviously if it's like a working gig, I tend to be a bit more reserved and pushed back and kind of like, you know, you need to know your place on stage at the same time. You can't go throwing like some James Hetfield headbanging at a wedding. Although saying that, I have quite a lot. But yeah, James Hetfield is like favorite guitarist of my favorite band. Super tight musician, great songwriter. Even in his 60s now, like I saw him in June at Download. He's just got this like, it's like a wall of music, like a wall of energy that he just throws out while he's playing, and I really like that. And that's something like I want to do. If I ever get to that size of venue, I want to go like full Hetfield. That's like the goal for me. So yeah, that's kind of the non-inspirational ones for me, I'd say.
The non-inspirational ones. Oh,
yeah. Sorry, non. Yeah, that's right. I made all that
up. Newsflash: Chris hates James Hetfield.
Exactly. Chris Horrocks hates Metallica. It was all a lie.
See that on the front page. Bloody hell!
Do not put that on Instagram.
That's the title of the episode. Why
Chris hates Metallica.
Wow.
Metallica fans hate him. Unlock the fretboard with these top five.
Well, thanks for sharing all of those. That was really, really lovely. I think inspiration can come from anywhere, really, can't it? And unsurprising places. Even if you don't listen to their music that much, someone can inspire you in a way. Or not really, you know... There's little moments like the Rick Beato one. You know, you might not be a fae with all of his back catalogue of all stuff he's done, but there's moments where he's explained something really eloquently, or you're just like, yeah, I get it, you make sense, I like you, kind of thing. Where it can just kind of click with you, I think.
Absolutely.
I think someone that does that for a lot of bass players, who is a bass player, is Ian Martin Allison, who brings that good energy show. And a lot of people in the bass community and probably outside of the bass community are like, yes, this guy loves what he does, you know? Ian, if you're listening, come on the podcast, man. Come on, let's do it. Shall we move on to the next segment?
I think we should move on to our next and final segment.
Wow. Wait.
Have we figured out interludes yet?
No. No.
No. I refuse. I would have thought you could... Oh, you don't want to do it now. Okay, that's fair enough.
just do them without, you know. It's not like, that much.
It's right? Like we gave you video, but at what cost?
Yeah, what else do you want from us?
It's cut down on the editing.
100%. Bugger that. Absolutely. All say it with me now, everyone. Bugger that. It's not the final segment. It is that tone you own.
Oh, yeah, I forgot we were doing that. Whoops.
Yeah, because you have brought along a tone for us to listen to, these lucky, lucky listeners and myself. I've already had a listen, and it sounds mighty meaty. Would you like to explain or tee it up before we kick off?
I will indeed tee it up. So, pretty interesting one and pretty simple one this week. It's just a quick little tone experiment I was doing earlier on in the week for a gig that I have. Well, it's on Friday for us, but at the time of everyone listening to this, it will have been a gig yesterday. Mm. Yesterday. So hopefully that makes sense. Essentially, I'm playing a wedding on Friday. The band are playing Kids by MGMT, but they don't have a keyboard player. Or they don't have a keyboard player that can recreate... They do have a keyboard player, but they can't recreate that specific synth sound. So I said to them, oh, I'll have a go. Why not? So what you're going to hear now is essentially, it's my Stingray straight into the quad cortex and then out via XLR into Logic, and then that is what we hear. You're going to hear three sections or three stages. The first one is the clean tone, which... He's pretty much compressor SVT into a dark glass 2x12 cab emulation, mm-hmm. not an 810, because I'm enjoying the stock 2x, I think it's 2x12. Yeah, I think it's a 2x12 neodymium speaker amp sim IR thing, whatever. That's the first section. Second section you hear is kind of like I've turned a chorus on and I've turned a fuzz on, but the blend is a bit too high on the fuzz, so you are losing a little bit that low end, but it's just a three-stage experiment. And then the final stage is an octave with a chorus and a fuzz. But the interesting thing I've discovered is the fuzz is blended. I'm using two rows in the quad cortex, like you could do with the Helix, for example. But what I'm doing is I'm boosting loads of low end on the clean blend, the clean side of the signal path, but I'm also rolling quite a lot of high end off. So the blend is kind of just I think it's only going up to like 400 hertz, I'm going to say. And then the fuzz is taking over everything else. And then I think I nail it, to be honest. I think if you listen to Kids by MGMT, I reckon I'm pretty close here in terms of the bass tone. And I guess we'll play it now.
Let's have a listen. Do you know what? I haven't listened to Kids in a long time, the song, and I
also ignore children regularly.
Yeah, I was listening to that then. I thought, yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. I remember how that bass tone sounds, and you're right. I think you nail it. It sounds so good, so good.
Thank you very much.
Did it take you? How did you approach it? Did you look up anything about how that was made, or were you just like based on ear, like? Kind of what this sounds like.
No, just the standard. Every bass player wants to play synth now. So I did a fuzz, I did a chorus, did the octave, obviously. And then the thing I kind of wanted to experiment was this like high pass, low pass thing that I'd seen. Ooh, who did it? I saw someone, and I've forgotten his name. I follow him on Instagram. I do subscribe to him on YouTube, so I think he's from Finland or Sweden. It's not Eric. And he did a demo on YouTube of this fuzz pedal that had a low-pass filter on... Is it low-pass? No, it's high-pass. Oh, God. Which way around is it? Which one rolls off the treble?
I couldn't tell you.
I think it's a low pass because isn't it meant to be it only allows the low to pass through?
Yes.
It's cutting off the high.
Yes, that's right. I always think like low pass, like low is like pass on the low. No thanks.
Yeah, and I don't think it is that. I think it only allows the low to pass through. But anyway, this pedal had a filter option where you could essentially start rolling the top end off the clean blend of the pedal.
Oh, good.
So you could blend the fuzz. So let's say you can have it at 50-50, clean and dirty, but you could be rolling the high end as well off that clean section. So essentially what I am doing is I'm rolling the top end off like the DI sound going into the front of the amp, which meant the fuzz was doing all of the sound in the upper mid-range, but I was able to kind of try and keep as much of the low end as I possibly could because it does suck the low end a little bit, the bass fuzz inside the quad cortex. So you do need to blend it in some way. It'd be cool if they'd make an actual bass fuzz with a blend. Wink, wink, neural DSP.
That would be revolutionary.
Be nice, wouldn't it? In a product of that magnitude. But anyway, I digress. Once I got that together, I was kind of like, oh, that sounds cool. And then as I was practicing the tune as I was practicing Kids, I was like, oh, this is like really close to the original. And then I think the only thing I might have done was, I think I might have messed around with the depth and the rate on the chorus. And then by then I was like, this is more than bang on enough for my my needs at this time. So I think I'm going to save that as a scene on my session preset on the Quad Cortex, which I should really put up on the cloud for people to download. So then whenever I need it, I've got this like kind of super obvious 80s. And also, I'm finally watching Stranger Things, so synth is like my jam right now.
Your favourite thing.
I'm going to wind everyone up now just doing the... It's a good show. It's a good show.
You're going to shave your head next as well.
And speaking one word, like, no. I'm only on season 2, so don't spoil anything for me. But it's a good show. I am enjoying it a lot.
You just wait. You just flipping wait, man.
Oh, I'm waiting. I'm enjoying it. Season 2, episode 3, I believe, I've just watched.
You must have known some things about the latest season, right?
Well, no. I've been quite lucky where I've been able to dodge loads of it. Everything I kind of knew has already happened in the show. So I've virtually... The only thing I know about is I've watched the first sort of 20 seconds of, like, the Master of Puppets bit.
Oh. that's the whole bit that I was like, Chris is going to lose his mind.
I know. I'm aware of that bit because everyone... Because what I do is at jam night, I'd play the start of Master of Puppets constantly for people.
Yeah.
I just play that bit all the time because I've been playing that relentlessly since the age of like 14. So,
but apart from that, I've been doing relentlessly since the age of 14.
Oh, I've been doing that too. Often while listening to Mass. Wait, what?
Knitting.
Anyway, James Hetfield, biggest inspiration. Interesting. Anyway, in terms of Stranger Things, though, don't know anything about the plot. I don't know where it's going. I don't know anything about it, which I'm really happy about. So, nobody spoil it for me, please, or I'll be really, really, really pissed off at you.
Well, I'll be sure to be dropping some hints in this podcast.
Okay.
That was not a clever hint, by the way.
Okay.
Nice. Well, I think you did a bang-up job of getting that tone. Let us know how the gig goes, because I bet they're going to be well chuffed with that.
I will try, and I'm taking the GoPro, so I'll try and film that bit, and hopefully people can hear it. It might be a bit tricky, because I'm on a wedge for that gig. I'm not taking an amp, because they're all in-ears, except me. So I'm going to be on a wedge. So hopefully the camera picks it up. I am actually considering buying a little recorder that can live on my pedal board.
Oh, no.
And then just run a little XLR out into the recorder. And then I can record my bass at gigs and blend that in with the camera audio of the GoPro.
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Yeah,
because that's what I've built my rig around, kind of. Well, not around that, but it's a function, because I've got a DI patch bay on the back of the mothership. I've got a splitter going, so it takes the cab sim signal that I'm sending to front of house, and then it just goes to another DI out, so I can have that going into some kind of recording device.
Yeah, like a little Zoom recorder that records onto an SD card.
Yeah,
yeah. I think I would like to do that, because the problem I have is the only problem I've got is with the GoPro footage is. The GoPro microphone's really good. Like, I think it's a really good microphone, but I want to have a little bit more of the actual bass tone just to blend in, especially because the purpose is to, at the end of the day, one, like, promote me. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, God. And then also show the actual bass tone. You're like, here's what I use on a wedding. You know, I think this sounds good. Hopefully you do too. And because at the moment, all you can really hear is...
Yeah. Well, no matter how good the microphone is, unless it's like right up against the speaker, for our needs, it's going to be useless. So,
I know the curse of being a bass player.
Yeah. Nice. Well, speaking of curses being a bass player, let's move on to the next segment.
Nice. Well, Johnny, it actually is the final segment.
Wow.
I know I shot the... I know I jumped the gun earlier, but we're here now. It's time for the big bass debate.
I'm ready.
Oh, God. For this week's big bass debate. I'm looking at my phone, by the way, for those of you at home. Here it is. iPhone 11. Oh.
Nice.
I'm not buying the 15 because I can't afford it.
No.
USB-C would be nice, though. Anyway, big bass debate time. How do you define overplaying? And do you have any tips / tricks to spot when you are doing it?
Overplaying, big red flag. I thought this was a good question because it's funny, isn't it? It made me think, like, God, us bass players have to worry about that. And then, like, guitarists and drummers are probably like, I'm going to do as much as that as possible. That's my whole point. And we're like, no.
What? I don't know. I reckon you can get in just as much trouble overplaying as a guitarist and a drummer. Oh God, I've played with some drummers who have no understanding of the context of like leaving room for anything.
Well, you know, I think that's what defines
overplaying,
really, isn't it? And what we always need to be mindful of is that it's for the song. You can't all be stepping on each other's toes and climbing over each other to get to the top spot at the same time. It just doesn't work and just sounds,
you know,
awful.
I think unless the music calls for it, which it rarely does. In my line of work, it rarely does. Like if you're in one of these bands like Van Halen or Mr. Big, you know, these big like maybe overplaying is like a good thing at times, but even then, the big problem I have with overplaying is if you're a bass player and you put a complicated thing or a fill or something over the top all the time, the audience gets fatigued by your playing, and you sort of so if you're constantly playing a fill at the end of every bar, you are like raising the bar in what is like deemed impressive to the listener. So if you do loads of flashy stuff in the first 10 seconds, you've like ran out of room. Like you've run out of speed or anything. Speed, impressive stuff. Whereas if you like locked it down all the way through to the start of the first chorus and put a good, you know, tasteful fill that works around everyone else going into that first chorus, you'll smash it.
And I think people,
and what I tend to do is, again, it depends on the situation, is I will put more fills in towards the back end of the song. Like I'll make the parts a little bit more complicated. This is on wedding stuff where I can get away with it to an extent. By the time we're reaching that last chorus, I'm playing the part with a few little extra things. Like there might be passing notes between the chords. There might be more fills in the last chorus than there were the first chorus. And that's kind of, I feel like your intro, your verse and your first chorus introduces the song to the listener. And they need to understand what they're listening to first. And for that, I feel like you need to leave room for the main sections of the song. Mainly the vocal, standout melody, standout guitar part. You need to stay out of the way of that, in my opinion. But towards the end of the song, these themes have been established. And either, you know, there is the odd chance that the audience might be coming a little bit fatigued by hearing that key melody, because they've just heard it for two of the choruses, and now we're going into the last one. So maybe this is a good opportunity for you to kind of, I don't know, it can be, I know we're talking about overplaying in terms of physical, you know, the mechanics of moving, but it could be overplaying in terms of you're using too many effects. I would also define that as overplaying. So for example, for the last chorus, you could be like, I'm just going to put a bit of drive on, just to, not loads, just enough to kind of give the song a bit of variation and a little bit of oomph. Or maybe I'll play a little bit higher, but I'll kick the octave pedal on, so we've got this sudden lift of like, oh, there's more going on now. Those are good things. What is bad, in my opinion, is someone who is just doing too much all of the time. So I get annoyed at bass players when I see this, because I want to hear the bass part. I want to be inspired by your bass part. But if you're sticking loads of slides in, passing notes loads, you're pissing me off, is the short way of describing it.
Yeah.
And I think you're spoiling, I think if you're overplaying, you run the chance of, one, spoiling the song. And the way I view it is, you're almost being too self-indulgent. You're too much going, hey, look at this, guys. I know my major scale well enough to hit the sixth and descend down, hit the third of the next chord and transition into it. And I'm like, but we didn't need to do that. And actually, yeah, good for you. You know how triads work and you know how scales work. Cool. It sounds shit. Don't do it.
Yeah. Truth bombs being dropped in this episode. It's totally true. And I think that doing the thing that progresses the song as it goes along is the best way you can kind of do that. If you like to do flashy bits, it's not all, don't put all your eggs in one basket and just like drop them all at the start. Sprinkle them on throughout, you know, and
tease
and build
me.
Up. Yeah, tease me, baby. That's what we want. And there's nothing better. And I even with like backing vocals and things like that, like you want the last chorus to be like the biggest one. I've been in band situations before where there's been three of us on vocals, one person the lead, another person's kind of doing the main harmonies, and then I was kind of there doing some other harmonies and backup bits. In bits where there isn't like three-part harmonies, they're like, oh, why aren't you doing the backings on that bit? I'm like, well, it's the first chorus. And yeah, like nothing else is changing in the last choruses. So if I come in with another backing in the last chorus, it's going to elevate it. And like, it's simple songwriting, you know? And the second verses in songs sometimes change it a little bit, you know, or melodies change and you start getting little motifs that will then repeat in the bridge section later on, you know, it's things like that. And the bass should think about that as well. It's a songwriting
thing. Absolutely. And it can be as simple as the first chorus, you can be playing like quarter notes and just letting them ring, you know, just going, you know, like one and two and three. But then you can move on into the last chorus and be more driving, you know, like one and two and three and four and one and two and like add more. It's about like the overplaying is. So the question is, we have to define overplaying and then figure out what we do when we do overplay. Because sometimes we do, you know. I've been guilty of doing it. Like, you know, I play at a jam night where it can be really easy to just go, I'm just going to do this and just rip over everything because who cares? It's a jam night at the end of the day. But that's not fair on the person who's got up to play. You know, I want to let them shine because, like, I'm there to serve you. You've got up and you want to play at this song. I'm there to make sure you have a good time, not make sure I have a good time. Because I'm here for work. You're here as like someone who's had to have a good time. I said have a good time quite a lot then.
You're having a good time.
But I think no. But anyway, the definition of overplaying, I think, is adding unnecessary additional notes, rhythms, textures when it is unnecessary, or I'll go one further, is a detriment to the song as a whole.
There's nothing worse than listening to a song. I've heard it on songs that are, you know, released. And, you know, we're tuned in to listen to the bass, of course. And it's when it takes you out of the moment, like, and you're like,
yeah,
ooh,
yeah,
I really didn't like that. Or like, there's too much going on. Or like, this would sound so much better if you're just doing it normally. And I, in the studio once, I came to that realization a couple of years ago when I can't remember the song and what section it was now, but we had a moment where the drums were doing something like building up, going really fast. And I originally was kind of following that, you know, it's simple, and then building up, going faster and faster. And the producer was like, do you know, can you try not building it up so much and just hitting it like on the main beat, and it sounded so much better for it. And I was like, wow, that's just an example of like me wanting to do the complicated thing here, because thinking I'm matching the drums, this is going to sound great, and it
which is usually the best. Like, I try my best to match the drummer as much as I can.
Rule of thumb.
You know, I'm trying to. Rule you don't drum. Follow the guitar, follow the kick drum. That's like that's what I try to do at least. But it makes sense that you would want to do that. I would want to do that, and I think most bass players would.
That's what I ended up doing. That's what I ended up doing. Is just following the kick, because the kick was just standard. It was more like the bombastic snares that were then what the guitars were doing. But actually, it sounded far cleaner and just more solid by just following that. And that was a simple version of overplaying that I was like, it doesn't always sound better.
But the concept works. The worst one for me is when you're moving through like a chord progression and the bass player is like transitioning between the chords with like long fills. You know, like maybe you're playing for, I don't know, 3 beats of the bar, and then the full last beat is some sort of 16th note run that land almost like walking bass lines, but in a genre or a song that isn't suited to playing that kind of thing. Because walking bass lines are sick. I love walking bass lines, but it's not gonna work all the time. It's like, could you imagine doing a wedding and playing Don't Look Back in Anger by Oasis, which is C, G, A minor, E minor, F, G, back to C. That's the chord progression.
You could have said any letters then. I would have been like, oh, cool.
Yeah, okay. That's the chord progression.
G, J,
H. Yeah. But that, okay, well, that's the chord progression. And what the bass just does is it goes like, it just goes C, C, G, G, A, E, E, F, F, G, G, C. That's just what it does. It stays and it jumps between. Could you imagine though if it was like C, G, F, E, D, hit the G, climb. Do you know what I mean? Like running through triads, going into, you know, we're going down into this one, then we're going up into the next one, then we're going down into the next one, then we're sliding. It would, for me, it just ruin it. That's the only, I'm not going to give a fancy explanation. This, straight up, I think it would just spoil the song.
Yeah. Well, it changes the rhythm and the thing that everyone's moving to. Yeah. Then. It's less simple. Yeah. It's like, and you want the song to be, particularly that song, is quite accessible, you know, for a lot of people.
Absolutely. And it's food for thought. It's like, you can, but should you?
Yes. And I think that's an important thing to look at as well, is you can listen to what is being played, but then also what isn't being played. Like, maybe that's where you need to be doing your bits, where there's a gap, maybe. That feels, sometimes it's based on feel, you know, when you think, I could do with a little like bass fill there. There's a couple of Foo Fighters tracks from the tribute band that, where there's moments and in the song there's a fill, and it's just perfect for it, because there'll be a moment where the vocals have done their bit, step back, and then it's just, and it's like perfect place for a little bit, and then back into the singing. When there's like on and off vocals, like I say, don't want to step on toes, don't want to step on anyone else, particularly the lead person, being either the guitar in that moment or the vocals, you know. It's a team effort. Team.
Absolutely, go team.
We've got to be cheerleaders in these moments. And that's, I agree. I think that's all I have to say, really.
Me too.
Bloody marvellous.
All right.
I think that ties us up for this episode. Thank you so much to everyone that asks your lovely, lovely questions. Like I said at the start, please go and follow us on Instagram at InThePocketPod, where you can find our posts and find out who the latest guests are. You can suggest a guest as well. Who do you want to see? You know, drop us a comment, drop us a message, let us know. And you can also share the podcast around with your friends as well. Speaking of, please leave this a 5-star review on your listening platform of choice. It really helps us. The algorithms are reaching more people. So it's free to do, super quick and simple, but really, really helps us out. Again, if you're watching on YouTube, because yes, there is a video version of this podcast due to high demand, you can give that a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel as well. That would also really, really, really help. Chris, my dear, where can people find you?
You can find me quite literally everywhere under That Guy on Bass. And regarding the podcast, give us a follow and all that jazz. The bigger the podcast gets, the bigger the guests we can have on, which is very, very nice. Final plug, as always, please check out my band Darla. At the time of this coming out, we're cracking on. Our third single, Landslide's, already out. If you've heard of the band As Everything Unfolds, Charlie, the singer, does a lovely bit of screamy in the middle bit of that one. It's very good. I recommend. And we have many, many things in the pipeline, which I don't want to say big things coming soon, but big things are coming soon, as always. The big things continue to be soon. So please give us a follow and all that lovely stuff. That would be very, very nice, because being in a band is hard.
Big time hard. So yeah, definitely go and check out all that good stuff. Thank you, Chris. For myself, you can just find me on Instagram at Johnny Dibble and the same name on YouTube. So make sure you go and subscribe over there for weekly bass content and reviews and such. If you like those new Ashdown basses I'm pointing to you right now, definitely go and subscribe on next, and I'll be reviewing them very soon. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.